are living there. They were self-sufficient with vegetables, livestock, milk and cheese, and honey, if they had hives out on the edge of the trees that ran alongside the soft meadow valley beyond the walls. The weathered porter moved quickly into the cloisters. The dull light was still bright enough to expose the column's capitals. Carved, grimacing faces stared blindly at Blackstone as he went deeper into the shadows. Blackstone's stonemason's eye admired the skill of the craftsman who had cut and laid the walls hundreds of years before. The old monk stepped aside, ushering Blackstone into a bare room with a boarded corner that served as a bed, and gestured silently for him to wait. The monks indulged in speech only after midday prayers, and the bell for sext had already started its steady clanging. Blackstone looked through the small window. The monks had abandoned their tools and were washing their hands in a water trough before hurrying to prayer. Other monks in ancient times had planned these buildings carefully, he thought. A tributary that tumbled down from the forested hills must feed their well. It was a mystery to him why such a place had not been pillaged for the wealth of its food, if not for any silver in its chapel. There would be reliquaries and plate, and most likely relics of saints that could be plundered. Blackstone ran a hand across the bare planked bed nook. The walls were boxed with the same wood. At least that would offer some warmth from the chill of the stone walls. He had shared a room similar to these in another monastery a lifetime ago with his wife and children. They had been pursued by a vile enemy then, but had escaped, almost. Blackstone had been obliged to abandon Christiana, and she had been raped. It had been John Jacob who had rescued her, and saved Blackstone's son, Henry. The room suddenly pressed in on him. He stepped outside, ever wary of a situation that seemed normal in violent times. Could these monks be something else, disguised routiers? Did they draw outsiders in and kill them in their sleep? He cursed himself for having such thoughts. Better to concentrate on where he and his men might make a stand if this place were attacked. That series of small stone houses that were, he guessed, given over to retreat or meditation. Each had a walled garden, so anyone attempting to strike hard and fast would have sufficient obstacles in their path. If his own men were caught in the open during the coming days, this monastery could serve as a stronghold. All these inner walls would make it a good defensive position. Time passed, and his thoughts settled. There was no denying that the solitude of the monastery and its natural surroundings created a calmness within him. Such feelings could lull a man into carelessness when in enemy-held territory. He grunted to himself, "You will not seduce me." He kissed the silver-wheeled goddess at his throat, and then tucked her away. Better to let the small crucifix he wore next to her be visible in such a place. The porter reappeared, beckoned, and waited for Blackstone to join him.
"The prior will see you, Sir Thomas," said the monk, now that he was allowed to break his silence.
The prior stood before a window that showed an elevated view of the valley below. He was younger than Blackstone expected, a man most likely to have seen 40 years of life, but not the venerable sage that so many monasteries had at their head. He extended the folded document that identified Blackstone.
"I am Prior Albert."
"You are welcome here," Sir Thomas. "I have arranged for our armourer to give your men quarters in our dormitorium."
"Thank you, Father. We will pay for the care and feed of our horses."
"I am grateful. We are self-sufficient, but contributions are welcome, as are you and your men. Routiers have been slowly cleared from these valleys by levies of the seneschal, but the threat is always there, and I hope you are here to attend to those who remain. Levies are not experienced fighting men."
His eyes noted Blackstone's stature.
"Unlike you and your men, you are here to sweep away those who still blight this region."
Blackstone tucked the document into his jupon.
"I have orders to reclaim towns in the name of my king," he answered. "I have sent one of my captains south to recruit more men. I have given this monastery as the place they should return to."
A frown creased the prior's brow.
I doubt we have sufficient food to cater for the men you have now. If they increase in numbers, then we will certainly not have enough supplies.
A meal a day for my men, for 2 days, will be ample, father. I have bowmen with me who can hunt and bring in fresh meat, which we'll willingly share.
The prior raised a hand. We follow the rule, Sir Thomas. We do not eat the flesh of four-legged beasts.
Fowl, yes, but nothing more.
You are aware of this, surely?
Indeed. But I see you have a misericord. Does that not mean you allow your monks to eat meat or cooked offal on the non-fasting days? The refectory remains your sanctuary for the strictness of the rule.
Prior Albert smiled. Your eyes are as sharp as your knowledge of our discipline, and you are familiar with some of our weaknesses. He shrugged. Yes, we allow meat on certain days, but not partaken in the refectory. If you wish to hunt, then we will accept your offering.
So, Blackstone thought. There it was.
The monks bent the rule of their founder. That was common enough.
What else might influence them to be less strict about their behaviour, other than their desire to taste meat? Could they be bought by routiers? Is that what kept them unmolested?
I have asked myself why you have been spared any assault from the routiers. Blackstone's tone challenged the prior. The prior nodded. It is a fair question.
He raised a hand to gesture towards the distant view.
You saw the ruined houses when you rode here?
We did, which is why I asked. If they raided and burned the villages, then they would have stormed these walls and seized anything of value. You and your monks would be dead.
It was not routiers, my son. It was the pestilence. It swept through these valleys a year ago. No more than 2 days' journey on foot was a Franciscan priory. Not one of the 30 friars survived.
Blackstone sensed the Benedictine monk was not too distressed by the death of those from another order.
Most of the stones from their buildings were put to good use, said Father Albert. Here, he added in what appeared to be an apologetic tone, to strengthen our walls, just in case of attack.
But you were not harmed by the plague. You and the brothers, said Blackstone. So you stayed here, in safety. Did you not help those who needed it?
Those who left the safety of these walls to help the infected died the same agonizing death. I ordered the houses boarded up, and where the pestilence was most virulent, I had the houses burned.
Were those infected inside?
The prior showed no sign of regret. Sir Thomas, when the boils burst, the stench is beyond description. We burned every corpse. 200 people died in this valley, including 8 of my fellow brothers.
He gazed out across the ruined hovels.
We left the ruins in place and marked their doors with the sign of the plague, and no routier dared venture near us.
We saw no red crosses on any door when we rode in.
They are there, my son. Faded, perhaps, but there. And the news of the plague that killed every living soul in this place spread as quickly as the pestilence itself. We have been left in peace ever since. And, as I told you, we are blessed that there are those in these valleys who kill routiers for the vermin they are. I suggest you rest here for a few days. Time passes slowly here, and we find it gives men a chance to pray and reflect. See the week out. We have sufficient food. You would be most welcome, and I would be pleased to share a meal with you and to hear how the peace treaty goes. I beg you, do not deny me the pleasure of your company.
Your gracious invitation is most welcome, Father Albert, said Blackstone. Good manners always helped an invitation to be extended, and gaining the trust of the prior might yield more information.
Excellent, said the prior, and once you and your men are rested and have enjoyed the succour of mass, then you can acquaint yourself with those who share your intent to rid us of those devil's sons.
And where would I find them?
2, perhaps. 3 days' ride from here, you will find Countess Catherine de Val.
And her husband?
Dead? Killed by routiers.
And she has soldiers to protect her?
Yes.
At the Chateau de Falice. Chapter 35.
It's not a woman's name, Gilbert. It's a chateau. And she has armed men behind the walls, Blackstone said.
William Cade? Asked Kilbert, as he and Blackstone hunched over a plate of food along with their men in the guest house. A flickering candle on the rough table between them dripped wax onto the scrubbed tabletop.
I don't know, said Blackstone, toying with the melting wax.
I questioned the prior and found the route. We leave at first light.
We're going to assault a castle,
said Kilbert, wiping his plate with a piece of torn bread, and then cleaning his eating knife on his sleeve.
I don't know what we'll do until we get there, but if good fortune has smiled on us, then Cade might also fall into our hands, and if we find him, we find Ap Madoc and the gold, and then we avenge Peter Garland.
Kilbert glanced around the refectory. They are meagre with their servings here.
He winced, and his belly growled.
If I could find one of the lay monks, he might be persuaded to grace my plate with more food. Would they be offended if I asked for more?
Anyway, it makes no sense, William Cade, going to a place that has kept brigands at bay.
Blackstone pushed his plate forward.
Finish this.
Kilbert happily obliged.
I know you, Thomas. When your hunger deserts you, it means impatience rules your belly, not your head.
We need to rest the horses, but I'm tempted to leave now.
Kilbert eased a piece of food from a tooth.
As I feared.
A day's rest hurts no one, neither man nor beast. Did you ask about whether they would permit us to eat meat? This pottage is little better than Will Longdon's fare, and my knife barely cut the cheese.
Why not stay a few days? Let him and Jack go and hunt. Put strength back into us. Some of the men still carry wounds. They may be slight, but they can irritate a man in a fight. And if you've a mind to go scaling walls and street fighting, then we'll need every man here. And if Cade is there, then we need to find out more.
Kilbert watched his friends, who seemed distracted.
Thomas, you're already planning an attack. I can see it.
Not yet, Gilbert.
Not until we see what we're facing. Did you see any plague crosses on the doors of those ruined hovels when we rode in?
Most of them didn't have doors, just wicker shutters. But on the others, I didn't notice. Why?
Prior Albert said the plague killed everyone around here, and it kept the skinners away.
Understandable, Thomas. If we had known, then perhaps we would not have come this way.
Yes, perhaps.
Blackstone appeared distracted.
Something's not right.
We'll stay 2 or 3 days, get some fresh meat and rest.
Kilbert knew his friend well enough to realize there was more to Blackstone's change of mind other than resting men and horses.
And?
We watch and we listen. I will go out with Will, and I'll take John and Moulin with me. Stay alert, Gilbert. These monks are too content.
Blackstone and those with him left the monastery before nightfall, with a blanket roll and dried food. There was no sense sleeping when his instincts had alerted him. They trudged back up the hills towards the ruined houses. Each of them checked the markings on the doors. It appeared that the prior had spoken the truth. There were faded red crosses, but they were only visible close to.
Will you and Moulin find one of the houses on the lower path? John and I will stay here and keep watch on the track across the ridge. We hunt tomorrow.
What are we looking for, Sir Thomas? Said Moulin.
Blackstone shook his head. I don't know, but I don't like the idea that these monks have remained untouched by routiers. One of us sleeps, one stays awake.
Moulin snoring will wake the valley, said Will Longdon.
And your farting will sound like rolling thunder, answered the throat-cutter.
Then clench your buttocks and tie up your jaw, said Blackstone.
And what about the dead? Said Longdon. Are their spirits clinging to these ruins? I've no wish to wake in the night and feel the chill of a spectre. A man would be hard-pressed not to cry out.
The chill you feel will be the metal of my knife, jabbing you to allay the stench, fool, said Moulin,
tucking his bedroll beneath his arm.
Aye,
Treat this with irreverence, you Norman oaf. But it is known that those unshriven souls, dragged from their bodies, cling to the last thing they knew in this mortal world. If they haunt us, then I'll bend you over and point your ass in their direction. That will cleanse the place of any evil spirits better than a priest with a cross.
All right, said Blackstone. Enough.
We stay silent through the night, unless something unusual occurs. Will Longdon grabbed his blanket and war bow.
Like damned ghosts, he muttered.
Like damned ghosts, said Blackstone, or those who might wish us to join them. Kilbert beckoned Alain de la Grave to him.
You're familiar with the monastery?
My father took me on his travels when he patrolled his lands. We rested in a monastery.
Good. Go to the scriptorium, admire the monk's work, be humble. The Benedictines like humility. After a while, express interest in what it means to be a monk. Tell them that being so young and not suited to a life of indulgence in a wealthy household, you have often considered taking up the life. Tell them that you venerate such a place as this, that has stood for hundreds of years, and ask if you might see the chronicle of the monastery.
Why would I do that, Sir Gilbert?
Because you're an idiot, and well suited to the life, Gilbert sighed. Because, boy, no monk, prior, or abbot ever keeps a journal of their own lives when living in a place like this, but a record is kept of events that affect the monastery. See what's been written. If there are those who are patrons, remember their names. If travellers are given accommodation, see when they came and who they were. What we are after, lad, is anything that will tell us more about this place. Understand?
Yes, Sir Gilbert.
Off with you, then. And if the bell rings for compline, see if you can avoid being persuaded to go with them, because night prayers drone on until a man has no choice but to fall asleep.
The young Frenchman nodded and left. Kilbert looked down the length of the dormitory. Some of the men had rolled into their blankets. Others tended their wounds, helped by Jack Halfpenny and Perrine. Kilbert tapped Perrine on the shoulder.
Leave Jack to see to that for now.
He turned. Perrine followed him to the door.
Perrine, I want night guards posted. Nothing obvious. Find places where we can watch for anything suspicious.
Are we expecting trouble?
No, but Thomas wants an eye kept open. He's not happy about this place. More than that, I don't know.
Then we should have men in the stables to protect the horses in case there's trouble.
Yes, and when Jack has finished, tell him to seek out places where the archers might be effective. They need range and an open place to shoot. Don't put the men there, but have him determine where it should be, just in case.
Once his orders had been given, Kilbert found himself a deep sill and propped his back against the stone wall from where he could see the central courtyard and some of the cloisters, where monks sat and contemplated whatever it was that monks contemplated when not on their knees or bending their backs. He had scavenged another piece of cheese and bread, and watched as crow-shuffling monks hunched their way towards the church. The bell for vespers rang out, and two or three monks started lighting the night lamps in the dormitory and latrines. He would forsake his bed tonight and watch from this vantage point, because there was one thing he had learned over the years. Thomas Blackstone's instincts needed to be listened to. Kilbert had nodded off, but Perrine poked him. He awoke without a sound, hand already on the knife at his belt. But Perrine's fist closed over it. No sense risking being stabbed by a veteran whose reflexes had kept him alive longer than most fighting men. The dull glow from the cresset lamps cast their shadows over the monastery. He stared into the shadows where Perrine pointed. He saw nothing. Then a monk scuffed his way towards the church. Kilbert looked at Perrine with a questioning look. Perrine shook his head and made a small gesture for him to be patient and stay looking at the shadows. Nothing moved. Then the dull clanging of the bell sounded again. Vigils. It was midnight. The monks made their way into the cloisters from their dormitory, and after a few more chimes, the bell fell silent. Perrine eased his arm forward to where a shadow was changing shape. Moments later, two monks skirted the wall. They kept their profiles away from the light, but their movement made the darkness shimmer. Kilbert followed them until they reached the porter's gate.
The gatekeeper stepped out quickly in a practiced movement, eased the gate open just enough for the two men to pass through, and for the spluttering nightlight at the porter's lodging to show that both men carried bedrolls tied across their backs. The gate closed.
"Anything else?" Gilbert whispered.
Perrine shook his head.
"They might be going on a pilgrimage."
"Need to set off early," he said quietly. Gilbert grinned, which was as likely as breakfast being served with the boiled haunch of a pig. The high ground and forests muted the monastic bells. The pinprick of lights from the areas lit behind the monastery's walls flickered like distant stars. The path leading down towards the monastery was a black tongue leading to the gaping mouth of the valley. There was sufficient light in the night sky for Blackstone to see two bent figures begin their climb up the steep track. He pushed the toe of his boot into John Jacob, who lay curled, with his back pressed against the wall of the house where they were keeping watch. His squire made no sound of complaint, but got quickly to his feet and followed Blackstone's gaze. The monks made good progress, their life of physical labour and no doubt their journeys across the hills allowing them to make good time. As they drew closer, Blackstone could hear their laboured breathing. They were not big men. No monk was ever as well muscled as a fighting man, but there was sufficient nightlight for him to determine by their progress that they were wiry and agile. As they drew level, Blackstone and John Jacob stepped out. The shock of seeing them caused the two monks to cry out. They stumbled, but Blackstone had already brought his fist down on the side of one monk's head. John Jacob quickly assaulted the other, a hard blow to his stomach, bringing the man down onto his knees. Two more dark shapes were quickly making their way up the track.
"These are the only two," said Moulin, as Will Longdon wheezed behind him, in an attempt to keep up with the big man's strides.
"Bring them inside," said Blackstone. Moulin and John Jacob manhandled the two monks into the derelict house. "Bind them, put them in that corner, and between us we watch them until morning. It'll be first light soon." With a final look out into the night, he found a piece of ground less strewn with rubble, and threw down his blanket. The night chill caused no discomfort. He closed his eyes, and was soon asleep.
Chapter 36 It was close to mid-morning when Blackstone led the others back into the monastery. Moulin carried a small deer carcass across his shoulders, brought down soon after dawn by one of Will Longdon's arrows. Men greeted them from where they loitered, seemingly relaxed. But Blackstone noted that they had been placed strategically, either to kill any monk attempting to attack them, or, should an enemy approach from outside the walls, to easily seize a vantage point. Blackstone beckoned one of the monks. "Take my man to the kitchen. He'll butcher the deer and give you the offal to cook. We will share the meat. Prior Albert has given his permission." Moulin followed the grinning monk. Cooked liver, kidney and heart were a welcome treat, and if the big man was as skilled with a knife as their own cook, then there might even be enough to go around. At the very least, the deer's bones will be put into the soup. Gilbert followed Blackstone to the water trough, where he washed his face and hands. "Two men left at midnight," said Gilbert quietly. "We have them," said Blackstone, shaking the water from his hair. "Tied and gagged. They can't raise the alarm." "No doubt they were willing to tell you what you needed to know." "Once Moulin raised his knife to their throat, it frightened them enough for them to piss themselves and tell me everything." "And?" "Prior Albert had instructed them to go to Felice and tell them that English brigands had sought shelter here and that we would soon be travelling north. It would have given them time to ambush us."
"The bastard prior is in their pay."
"No doubt."
"It fits," said Gilbert. "I had the monastery chronicle looked at. There's enough largesse from this Countess Catherine de Val, and before her, a year or more back, her husband. His death was recorded. Killed at the hands of skinners, like he said, but butchered. He had a bad death.
Is there a good one to be had?
Anything else?"
"Nothing of use to us. I sent the boy. He did well."
"Well, now we must act normally. Another few days here will suit us. Bring the men together."
While the monks were engaged in their duties, Blackstone gathered his captains, and Tate, with the sergeants and Ventoners. and told them what had happened during the night. I'm going to send two men to take the monk's place. Once they deliver the message that we are riding north, it will draw out troops from behind the town's walls. By the time they move to ambush us, we will already be on the road and lying in wait for them. Tate, I want you to go into the Felice with one of Bayard's Gascons. Two or three of the men gestured they will be willing to go with Tate. Blackstone pointed to one of the men. Othon. You go with him. You're about the right size for one of the monks' habit.
Sir Thomas, said Alain, Master Tate might raise too much suspicion. They will recognize his accent. I should go.
The men looked at the youth, as if he had declared himself the next pope. One of Tate's men called out, You think they would believe you to be a novice? You're a lord's son. You need to be a rough-tongued commoner like Tate here. The men jeered their agreement, and Tate grinned. Aye, boy, you need a few years of tavern life before you are ready to escape and come to a place like this. Kilbert grabbed Alan's hands and turned them upwards. You've barely enough calluses to show you abuse yourself, let alone work the land. The men laughed as Alain blushed. He snatched free from Kilbert's grip.
I could say I worked in the scriptorium, he blustered.
Not if you were a lay brother. You would have to be ordained, and you would be tonsured, said Perrine. Alain stood his ground and faced the grinning men.
My accent would not be questioned. If the wrong man is sent into Felice, then it will be you lying dead in the mountains.
You can shave my head, if that will convince everyone. Blackstone placed a hand on the boy's shoulder. We do not doubt your courage, but you're too young to be ordained. Blackstone hesitated for a moment. But you make a good point about Tate's accent. Kilbert tugged at Blackstone's arm, pulling him a few paces out of earshot.
Thomas, do not consider sending the boy into the town. It gives him the perfect chance to betray us. He's French. You humiliated him. And even if he does not, then if Cade is there, he might recognize the boy from when we were in Saint Bernice.
He barely caught sight of him. When we stepped into the courtyard, there the lad was behind us. Cade and Ap Madoc were looking at us.
You cannot risk the men's lives, insisted Kilbert.
They are already at risk, said Blackstone. Kildare sighed.
Thomas, Perrine was barely with us when Cade rode with the men.
You had sent him off to follow the brigands' tracks. We need a man we know and can depend on. Blackstone thought on it for a moment and then beckoned Perrine to him. Perrine, I want you to go into Felice. Cade won't recognize you, not wearing a habit and a cowl.
Of course, said the stocky fighter.
You'll need to shave your beard, said Kilbert. The fighter grinned. Aye. Well, that will give some relief from the lice. Blackstone still looked troubled about his decision.
Cade rode with Moulin's men. He won't look twice at me. Who goes with me?
I'll send the boy.
Thomas,
Kilbert sighed. His accent will help.
Kilbert knew there was no point in arguing.
All right. Perrine, when you get to this Countess Catherine at Felice, and you're questioned, tell them you have been a lay brother here for only a few months. That way, if there has been any contact between the monastery and the town recently, they won't expect to recognize you. Blackstone turned back to face the expectant young Frenchman. Alain, you will be a new lay brother who has sought sanctuary here because the English killed your family.
Thank you, Sir Thomas.
Blackstone turned to Tate. Did Chandos strike anywhere south of where we fought the Bretons?
We met resistance at Les Choux some months back, but it was little more than a skirmish, said Tate. The town surrendered quickly.
Do you know it? He asked Anna.
No.
Tate, who were the burghers?
The Hobbelaar shook his head.
I don't know, Sir Thomas. I was in the field, searching out any ambush. I went into the town with one of Sir John's captains, volunteered one of Tate's men. All I know is the mayor's name was Rivaud. He was killed. It's enough that English troops killed Frenchmen for you to have fled, Blackstone told Alain. But if your father was the mayor, then that adds strength to your story. You will have to maintain the lie if you are questioned, but there's no reason for them to do that if they believe the prior has sent you.
The young man smiled, flushed with enthusiasm. I will not fail you, Sir Thomas.
Kildare grunted. Fail us, and you will also die. Remember that.
I will, Sir Gilbert, he answered,
the brief moment of joy at being chosen evaporating. All right. Alain and Perrine will leave on foot today. I'll tell Prior Albert that I'm posting sentries on the ridge. Moulin, Will, Renfred, choose 2 men per post. That way, when we send men out, the lad and Perrine can slip away. Will, you take them up to the ruins, see them dressed, and make sure those monks stay securely tied. Then he addressed his long-serving friend. Perrine, you and the boy will take the monks' habits and their bedrolls. Go due north to Chateau de Felice. It's 2 days on horseback, so 3 full days or more on foot. He looked at Alain. It will be hard going. Perrine will not carry you. You stay the pace.
I will, Sir Thomas, and Master Perrine will have no cause to be slowed by me.
Good. Perrine, we will use the lad's accent to allay any suspicions, so you will let him do the talking. Act slow-witted, so that the questions go to him.
No difficulty there, my lord, said Will Longdon. Perrine once went to the wrong woman's bedchamber and climbed in next to her husband.
Ribald laughter was quickly quietened by a gesture from Kilbert. Best watch your arse, boy, he said to Alain, softening the threat with a grin. Blackstone kept a cautious eye on any monks who might pass, but so far there had been no sign of any of them being suspicious of the gathered men. By the 3rd day we will find an ambush site on the route. This Countess, or William Cade, will know how long the journey is from here, so they will send out their men to entrap us in good time. And we'll be waiting. Chapter 37 Perrine set a steady pace, and for the 1st day Alain struggled to keep up. His feet were soon blistered. And that night, after Perrine laid a fire, the seasoned soldier examined the young man's feet, despite his initial objection.
When you first start riding, you'll get blisters on your arse, but at least you can keep moving. These blisters on your feet, they will soon bleed. Piss on them, and let them dry, and then see how far we can go tomorrow. Bleeding or not, we have to get to Felice in the next couple of days.
Alain knew he was in no position to argue with the grizzled fighter.
The monk's sandals and habit chafe, he said.
Mine too, but you just ignore it.
The young Frenchman felt out of his depth, and knew that his ambition was getting the better of him. He felt the weight of insecurity press on him, remembering how, on the ridge, when the Bretons attacked, his terror had overcome his desire to kill those who had inflicted such brutality on his family. Had it not been for John Jacob that day, he knew he would have fallen beneath Breton swords. And when Blackstone took him through the routier's camp and showed him how to kill sleeping men, he had thought he had become more capable, but the truth, he realized, was that he was unable to match the toughness and stamina of the men he rode with. And now this truth was borne out by a day's march across stony track. Even the monks seemed more resilient than he.
I'll be all right, he said.
The stocky fighter glanced at him as he rolled out his sleeping blanket.
There's no choice in the matter, lad. Sir Thomas has given us a job to do, and when you piss on your feet, do it over there, away from me. I don't want the stench in my nostrils.
I will, Master Perrine.
Christ's sake, boy, stop calling me that. We are supposed to be monks, and we can't risk Cade remembering my name. Call me Brother Othon, or you'll get us both killed. All right, Brother Alain?
The young man grinned and nodded. Pleased the veteran was talking to him, because the day's walk had been in silence.
Should we not tell each other about ourselves? If we are monks serving the same prior, would we not know where each came from?
Perrine pulled his blanket over him and reached out to nudge another piece of wood into the fire.
Lay brothers join a monastery for different reasons. I'm supposed to be so dull-witted I'm only good for clearing shit from the animal pens, so you and I would have no cause to talk in the dormitorium, or when we eat. And the less we know about each other, the better, because then our lies will not become confused.
I don't know you, and you don't know me, because we work in different places in the monastery. Understood?
Yes, I understand.
Then get some sleep, because we leave at first light.
Alain moved away from his companion to the furthest limit of the light cast by the fire. He looked down at his blistered feet and urinated over them, being careful not to soil the rough cloth of the chafing habit. In that moment he felt a wave of self-pity come over him. Only recently he had been the son of a respected knight, to whom common men dipped their heads in greeting when he rode by, and now here he was pissing on his own feet, lower in status than even a common monk. Tears stung his eyes as sharply as did the urine his blistered feet. In his mind's eye he saw his mother and the man he called father. Blackstone had stopped him from seeing their mutilated remains, but he remembered the fouled sheet in which they had been carried to their grave. It took little imagination to picture their savage death. He snorted the phlegm from his tears and spat. His resolve stiffened. He must never allow self-pity or fear to grip him again. He turned and nestled the meagre bedding closer to the fire. Tomorrow he would keep up with his battle-hardened companion. The chateau sat on a craggy escarpment and took its name from the town that surrounded it. Some stone-built houses buttressed the outside of the walls, adding strength to the walls' defences. Beyond these 20 or so dwellings, the walls themselves remained Felice's main fortification, enhanced by the craggy rock face that dropped down below them. Attackers would be observed approaching across the bottom of the rocks, and would then face a seemingly impossible climb in the face of resistance. Chateau de Felice seemed impregnable. A shadow high in the sky caught Perrine's attention. It was a buzzard, and its keening cry heralded death. And Thomas Blackstone was miles away, so it had to be calling out for him and the boy. Perrine watched it soar high, imagining its eyes locked onto his. Would they both die inside those walls? Perrine glanced at the lad. Thomas Blackstone wanted him to survive, but would it cost Perrine his own life? He spat. Fuck the damn bird. He could seize William Cade's soul when the time came. Perrine gazed across the rugged hills to where the jagged bedrock supported the chateau as it rose above the low-pitched house roofs.
Doubtful if God's lightning could destroy a place like that, he muttered. No matter how many Sir Thomas might kill out here, he's going to have to get the men inside those walls.
How? Asked Anna. I see no way.
Me neither, lad. Once we are inside, we need to keep our eyes peeled, so that we can see if there's any weakness anywhere. We make a tally of how many armed men there are, because when they send some of them out to ambush Sir Thomas, they'll leave enough to defend the town. Remember, we tell them there are less than 20 men at the monastery. With luck, they will send twice that number to try and capture our comrades. He glanced at the young Frenchman. All right, now you have to start thinking like a damned monk. You will lead the way to the gate and tell the guards who you are. I will be playing the role of the dullard behind you. Don't be too damned cocky just cause you can find words to spout that others might not. Simple words, boy. Just deliver the message. You remember all that we spoke of today? He pulled the leather coif tight onto his skull. Alain de la Grave nodded. This final day's journey had been different from the first. Perrine had questioned him about his childhood, to see if he had been baptized and knew the psalms. That he could offer a blessing if need be. They had spoken about the monastery, testing him where the buildings were situated. When they ate meat. When they did not. Where the latrines were situated, and the name of the old porter who had spent most of his 60 years living in the monastery. Everyone would know Brother Gregory's name. Enough familiarity of the place, if questioned, not enough to show they knew more than they should. All right, Brother Alain, lead the way. Grip that staff and find purpose to your stride. We deliver important news from Prior Albert for Countess Catherine. No one else, just her. If we are separated, because you're the one who bears the message, then you will be facing her or the bastards she protects. Understood?
Aye, Brother Otham, I understand.
Perrine crossed himself and took a deep breath. Then God bless us both. They walked along the muddy track that meandered through the scattered households of dirt-encrusted villagers, who grew crops and raised livestock. Vilaines stopped, heads bowed, expecting a blessing when the two monks passed. Alain muttered a few words in their direction, and then they reached the bridge that led to the path up to Felice's iron-studded gates.
A deep running river swirled below. Perrine looked left and right. The causeway bridge seemed the only way into the town. The river flowed at an angle from the low hills and did not encircle the walls. Now that they were closer, he could see more clearly that the ragged, dry gully cut along the base of the rock face. Above this, the houses that leaned against the town walls formed another defensive barrier. A walkway had been built from great timbers and then planked so that it gave the appearance of an extended balcony stretching across the front of the houses. It was, to all intents and purposes, a wooden street that allowed the householders to walk around the walls to the gate. The broken ground below the wooden props holding up the walkway made it difficult to clamber up, as did the sheerness of the walls. And this approach could be easily defended by the householders, pouring boiling water or throwing missiles down onto any attacker. It was obvious to Perrine at that moment that no matter how many of the garrison troops or skinners Blackstone killed outside the walls, the town could not be taken. They were on a fool's errand. Sentries on the wall called down to the soldiers at the gate, and the two monks were admitted. A broad courtyard greeted them, as did the several corpses hanging from a gibbet. The bodies were torn and disfigured. The guard at the gate saw their stunned surprise.
"Routiers, they're starting to stink. The crows have had their fill of them. They'll be in the river in a few days, along with the others that were brought in."
Perrine and Alain needed no prompting to cross themselves. The carcasses showed savage injury, and if Perrine and the Frenchman failed, such would be their fate. The raptor's prescient cry had warned them. This was a place of death. Narrow streets cut away between houses that huddled wall to wall. It seemed at first glance that the alleyways were inhabited by tradesmen. Blacksmiths and carpenters shared the start of one street on the left of the courtyard, cooks, bakers and butchers another on the opposite side. The stench of acrid smoke from the forge was overpowered by the mouth-watering odour of baked bread. Alain's stomach growled.
"We have a message from Prior Albert," said Alain to the sergeant, who stepped from the guardroom.
Alain looked across to the other side of the gate, into what looked like a small armoury. The soldiers who loitered in the area were relaxed, the boredom of their routine reflected in their lack of interest towards the two monks. The sergeant turned and called to one of the other men.
"Take them to the countess," he ordered.
The man so ordered pulled on a skullcap helmet and nodded for the two men to follow him. They skirted the rotting bodies on the gibbet, and after a few hundred yards the dirt alley became paved. The passage was wide enough for a cart and horse and rose quickly, turning into a steep curving street that led to the chateau itself, where it rose above the town. In some houses they heard infants crying, in others pots being clattered. As they trudged behind their escort, a different breed of men appeared in doorways. Alain recognized their garb as similar to that of the routiers he had seen at his father's house at Saint-Bernice. They were not his parents' killers, but they were William Cade's mercenaries, and they were dangerous.
"Selling your ass, brother?" one of the men called as they walked past, lowering a beaker of drink from his lips. "You're young enough." He smiled a toothless grin. "I've impaled monks before now," he said, and stepped out to harass them, "impaled them with my sword."
He laughed and dodged forward to rub the back of his hand against Alain's cheek. Alain sidestepped, eager to avoid confrontation. Perrine tried to crowd in on his shoulder to block the brutish routier. The man had clearly had too much to drink. The routier pushed Perrine aside.
"Don't get in my fucking way," he said.
Perrine's muscled bulk barely moved from the shove, which surprised the belligerent man, but before he could make any more of it, the escort turned.
"They are from Prior Albert. The Countess does not allow any harm to come to these monks. Leave them be," he threatened.
"Or what?" snarled the man. The garrison soldier was no match for the killer, but he knew he had one weapon that would surely stop him.
"Or Master Cade will hear of it."
The drunk snarled, and then turned his back. Perrine's heart beat faster. They were being taken to the Countess, but perhaps William Cade was also waiting. He prayed that neither he nor the young Frenchman would be recognized.
Chapter 38
The higher Perrine and Alain climbed towards the chateau entrance, the more of Cade's mercenaries they saw. The two of them exchanged glances, wondering whether the Countess used these men as bodyguards, or if it was they who kept her as prisoner. Their escort spoke to two of Cade's men at the entrance to the chateau's courtyard and then turned back. The mercenaries then pointed them towards the main door, where even more of Cade's men stood. They were getting ever closer to the centre of the web that might entrap them. What seemed obvious was that the mercenaries were a barrier between the Countess and the townspeople below, and although there seemed to be more garrison troops than skinners, it was here, with these men, the power and strength lay. William Cade stepped out of the doorway. Alain and Perrine stopped.
"What brings you here?" said Cade.
"My lord," said Alain, bowing his head, "we have information from Prior Albert, but he asks us to deliver it to the Countess Catherine."
William Cade stepped closer and looked at the two men. It seemed that he was the final barrier to pass before being allowed inside. He studied the two men, eyes going from one to the other. He grabbed Perrine's wrist, who had the good sense not to resist, as Cade examined his hands.
"What work do you do at the monastery?"
Perrine grinned like a village idiot.
"I keep the livestock pens clean, lord," he said, lifting his chin proudly, as if he were the prior himself.
The men at the door behind William Cade laughed.
"He cleans out the shit," one cried. "Aye, and he smells like it," said Cade, turning his attention to the younger of the two men.
He carried out the same examination on Alain's hands.
"You're no lay brother who works the fields."
"No, my lord, I am a novice, and I've only been at the monastery for a few months."
"Your hands sweat. What frightens you?"
"Perhaps it is the exertion of the hard journey, and I am unused to being in the company of fighting men."
Cade grunted.
"Answer me."
"Most of my time is taken with study, and I am often given duties in the kitchen."
Cade was taking nothing at face value. He stared at Alain, who did not turn away.
"Then you will know the fat bastard who prepares the food and tastes it more often than he should. Name him."
Alain did not hesitate in his answer.
"Sir, I think you are mistaken. I do not know when last you were at our sanctuary, but it is Brother Simon who prepares the food with the grace of God, and he eats sparingly. Perhaps the brother you speak of served in the kitchens before I arrived."
William Cade said nothing. It seemed his question had been a bluff, as much a bluff as Alain's answer. It was possible Cade had never visited the monastery in person. The mercenary stepped back and looked at the two men.
"I need to see that you do not conceal any weapons. There are monks who think they carry out God's will by killing those who seek the pleasures of this world, and the Countess is no stranger to pleasure."
He gestured for them to raise their clothing above their waists. Alain and Perrine lifted their habits, exposing their nakedness. One of the men behind Cade spoke out again.
"Don't let the Countess see the lad's weapon, William. She will be keen to see it raised in anger."
The men laughed. "Monk or not, he bears more than a message from the prior. He carries his fortune between his legs. Perhaps it's a gift for her."
"And I'll be the first to take it with a knife should he try and deliver it," Cade snarled.
Alain lowered his eyes and his habit.
"He blushes," the man taunted. "He's a novice, for Christ's sake," said another. "Probably never even seen a woman. Never mind knows what to do with one. Fodder for the monks."
Cade pushed past them. "All right. This way."
"Not you," he said, pointing at Perrine. "No one who shovels shit need go any further."
Alain glanced at his companion. There was the briefest of looks between them, a warning, a moment of alarm, but Perrine quickly took on the mantle of a dullard.
"God bless you, brother. But even a man who serves the animals needs food. A scrap, perhaps? It has been a long journey. Is there a kitchen where a humble brother might be given a crust?"
Cade nodded to one of the men who loitered at the doorway.
"She'll want them rewarded for their journey. Take him to the kitchen yard. Feed him. This one will eat when he's delivered the message."
"Bless you, bless you," said Perrine,
bowing repeatedly, until one of the men grabbed his arm and turned him in another direction. The chill of fear gripped Alain as he followed the murderer, Cade, into the chateau's gloom. Two guards, who wore the Countess's blazon, stood at the carved door. They were older men, and looked to be retainers from the time the Count had lived, sworn men who protected the widow. Men, Alain thought, who would not be threatened by William Cade's reputation. They stepped forward and blocked the door.
"He has a message," said Cade, nodding towards the monk at his side.
One of the men stepped into the room, and a moment later reappeared, and allowed Cade and Alain to enter the Countess's quarters. The room he was escorted into was in stark contrast to the unfurnished and unheated entrance hall. Light filled the room from windows that overlooked the town and the countryside beyond. Richly embroidered tapestries hung over the harsh stone walls, and a massive fire blazed beneath a granite mantel. His sandaled feet were cushioned on woven rugs that lay over the rush-covered floor. Two large, ill-bred dogs lurched from the warmth of the fireplace and went as if to attack as he and William Cade entered the room. A woman's voice carried from the far side of the fireplace, a sharp retort bringing the dogs obediently to heel at the woman's side, where she sat in a carved chair, softened by silk cushions. Alain squinted at first, because the light from the vast windows obscured his vision of her. Cade pushed him closer.
"Two monks have come from Saint André's monastery," he said, and moved to her side.
She held a small embroidery frame on her lap, and did not look at him for a moment as she pulled a thread through the material.
"Who are you?"
she asked without raising her eyes.
"I am Brother Alain, my lady."
"And the one I saw from the window, your companion?"
"He is a lay brother. His name is Othon."
"Prior Albert usually sends brothers Pibrac and Dizier. Why has he sent you?"
She raised her eyes and looked at him. Alain stood 10 paces away, but from the moment his gaze fell on her, he felt his heart quicken. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. Black hair framed her face with the sheen of a raven's wing. There was colour in her lips, and her cheeks bore the blush of the fire. Her dark green eyes ate into him, but he could not resist staring at the rise and fall of her breasts, which seemed to be barely contained in the rich fabric of her dress. The heat from the blazing logs seemed to penetrate the coarse cloth of his habit, as he felt warmth creep into his groin. The taste of fear that had soured his mouth as he entered the chateau was now thick with the sweeter taste of lust. She stared, a hint of a smile at the corner of her mouth. Perhaps, he realized, she knew the effect she had on him.
"Well?" she asked, with a softness of tone that lulled him into a stammering reply.
"My lady, I don't know. Why? Perhaps because one is in the infirmary, and the other is doing penance for raising his voice in anger at another brother."
William Cade studied him, and did not wait for the Countess to make any further comment.
"Do I know you? Have we met before?"
I think not, unless you once prayed in the church at Les Choux, which is my home,"
Alain said quickly, desperate to answer without hesitation, but at the same time frightened that Cade might know of the town. Countess Catherine muttered a sound of delight.
"William, you have prayed in a church, rather than pillage it?"
Cade grunted. "I don't know the place, but I've seen you somewhere."
Alain swallowed hard.
"I have a common enough face."
"I think he has a beautiful face,"
said the Countess, ignoring the quick glance of irritation from Cade at her remark, staring with delight at the young man before her.
"A novice," she mused. "Well, I wonder whether a monastic life will prove suitable for you, Brother Alain. Perhaps you should wait a few years."
She pressed the needle through the linen. Alain's heart would not calm. A vein in his neck pulsed, and he felt the embarrassment of an erection beginning.
"Very well," she said, concentrating on her needlework. "What message does Prior Albert send?"
Alain concentrated. This moment was the culmination of his journey, and the trust placed in him by Blackstone.
17 men sought sanctuary, which Prior Albert gave gladly. They paid him with gold.
Cade's eyes registered at the mention of plunder.
"They are mostly English, but there are others," Anna continued. "Some French and German, I think, but I never spoke to them. They were kept in the guest house."
"And when will they leave the monastery?" asked the Countess,
some of the warmth lost from her voice.
"Prior Albert has told them to come north, towards Felice. He told them there is plunder to be had here. I am to tell you that they would leave the monastery 2 days after Brother Othon and I began our journey."
Cade looked down at the Countess, who seemed more interested in her embroidery. "I'll send 40 men, he said. 30 of your garrison and 10 of mine. That will be enough to overwhelm them." A thought occurred to him. "Do they have archers?" he asked Anna.
"No, my lord, only hobelars,"
he lied. "I'll get the men ready. They can ambush them easily enough," said Cade.
"William, do not send so many of mine. They are not as skilled as yours. 10 of my men, no more. Make up the numbers with your own men, and do not forget that we want some prisoners," she said, glancing up. "They must be taught a lesson."
Cade didn't like the idea of leaving so few of his men in the town. They were already outnumbered by the Countess's troops. If she should ever turn against him, then their numbers alone would be sufficient to overwhelm his own. But there was an incentive to use his men rather than the garrison's. Cade's fighters had the experience to defeat a smaller force without killing them. Garrison troops would be less skilled in the field. Cade stood to make money from the encounter. "As you wish. I have no desire to lose my bounty on those we deliver to you." He looked at Anna. "I'll take you to the kitchen, then you can be on your way." Countess Catherine eased a silk thread into her design.
"You would have us neglect our hospitality, William? Look at Brother Alain's feet. They are cut. They need attention before we send him back. Have food brought here. He should bathe, and then his wounds can be attended to," she said matter-of-factly. "And then he can join me in prayer."
Cade glowered. The bitch was grooming a novice monk to take to her bed. He resisted the urge to grab her throat, to show her that he would not be humiliated. Much good it would do him. If he killed her in a fit of rage, made her suffer for the power she held over him, it would be hard to escape with his life, no matter how tenacious his men were in a fight. The garrison troops would cut them down, and should she survive such an attack, then he had no wish to suffer the pain she could inflict on a man. He swallowed his pride, together with the words of condemnation. As he strode past the young monk, he swore to himself that he would carry out his threat made against the novice. Once the bitch had taken her pleasure, the youth would be of no concern to her, and then he would geld him. Chapter 39 Blackstone and Kilbert lingered on the road to Felice. They had allowed good time for Alain and Perrine to reach the town. Once the message had been delivered, soldiers would be sent to ambush Blackstone that same day. If the two bogus monks had reached the chateau by early morning, then Blackstone had planned to be a half-day's ride from the city walls. A chill wind persisted from the higher mountains, but the men made little effort to warm themselves, other than riding with their cloaks wrapped securely around them. They were on the alert for an attack, and would be ready to discard them the moment their enemy appeared. Blackstone had picked 15 men to ride in column behind him, while the captains rode on his flank, with their men out of sight. If Alain and Perrine had delivered their message, and suspicion had not been aroused, then a force outnumbering those on the road would soon appear. Blackstone had made the 2 captured monks ride with them on the pack horses, until they were far enough away from the monastery on foot not to be able to raise any alarm. They were given food, drink, and a blanket, and sent back. "I don't suppose William Cade will ride out against us himself, so that means after we kill those he sends, that we will have to seek him inside the walls," said Kilbert. "You think it's not worth our effort?" Blackstone said. "I'm thinking it's going to be difficult to root them out. God knows how many men this Countess has under her command. Street fighting is a dirty business, Thomas, you know that. We will lose men, and as yet we have no means to scale walls. If they are forewarned, then they will be ready. What do you propose? That we take on their clothing once we kill them and pass ourselves off? By the time we reached the town gates, the sentries were